All right. Hi, everybody. It's RCFB Talk 65. My name is Bob Akhayeri, and I'm going to be joined by my co-host, JD Moore. We're talking NAIA football. This is going to be fun. Tonight is kickoff for the college football season and the NAIA season. For several years now, they've been kicking off before everyone else, and I see our guest is already here. Wow, that's a record for one of our guests. We got you up here in a moment. We're going to be joined by Corey Thorpe, the co-founder of the popular Twitter account NAIAFball. So just want to give you all a quick thanks for joining us. I can see my co-host is up here. I can see Corey is connecting. We'll have that up in a second. And I got a real personal interest in NAIA football. One of the earliest pieces I did with RCFB was going to, actually, it was a twofer because I went down to Fort Worth and interviewed Coach Prudhomme right before they had their inaugural season returning to the gridiron at Texas Wesleyan. And that was a fun interview and visit to both the school, the facilities, learning the history of the program and the excitement they have. You know, speaking of, and I know we had tweeted about this earlier today, but Texas Wesleyan actually opens their season with an international game. Obviously, the bigger talk around the national news is the interesting matchup between Nebraska and Northwestern out in Ireland. But Texas Wesleyan, and this is something you'll see with NAIA teams, they're actually hosting a team from Mexico because Mexico's had college football for, I want to say, 90 years at this point. So a new campus down there, and it's kind of funny because it's Arkansas State. Arkansas State has a campus in one of the states within Mexico. It's about 2.5 hours northwest of Mexico City. That program, which started in 2017, is going to come up and play. And they're calling it, I think, the Classico game. And it should be fun. I think that's exciting. We need more of that. We need more international college football. In fact, I'm going to just sort of add this out. The NAIA had an international member before the NCAA did because the Simon Fraser, which is in the Vancouver area, wanted to play American rules college football. So the NAIA could let them in and they joined that until the NCAA finally revised their rules. I think part of that, and we'll get to this in the conversation, was so many of the schools that were NAIA in that region had moved to the NCAA that it made more sense for them to then also move there just because travel costs with an international border can be a little prohibitive, but I've heard some signs that we might see more international teams at some level, and I think that's exciting when we see matchups like that. But anyway, Corey, you've joined us. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, doing well. I mean, look, the NAI has two, I believe, Canadian teams that play baseball and basketball. Why not just come on in football as well? I mean, join the party.
Absolutely. In fact, it's really exciting. I heard, in terms of the rivalries that exist up there, they're finally going to have Simon Fraser and British Columbia play their annual rivalry. And I think they haven't quite figured out the rules they're going to use. They had done it before where they would alternate rules on which year they're playing, which is actually kind of amazing. Can you imagine that? I assume it's based on home field, which would make even more sense because, obviously the Canadian field's a lot bigger and you can't just, revise an NCAA or NAIA American rules field to accommodate, a 15-yard. How big are those end zones? They're like enormous.
Yeah, I can't imagine going back and forth on those rules. I mean, that puts Major League Baseball and designated hitter, no designated hitter to shame. It's a completely different ballgame.
So, we're kind of jumping into the weeds. Could you tell our audience, because not everyone necessarily knows NAIA football as well, give us an introduction just to the NAIA in general.
So the NAIA is going to be akin to the NCAA in terms of setup. In terms of competition level, I would put it about halfway between D2 and D3. Some of your D3 schools are going to be better, at the top, but D3 is not as deep with the parity as the NAIA is. And then of course, a lot more of your D2 schools are going to be better than your NAI schools, but you will see an NAI win over a D2, possibly even over an FCS Pioneer school, more than likely this year.
What team are you circling there?
Oh man, Valparaiso is always a good one. to get a win against since they're pioneer. Stetson is one that you can get a win against.
And that makes sense because the sun is all around them. So there's a lot of teams in that region that could easily make a part of that non-conference schedule for them.
I want to say that it's not even a Sun team that's playing Stetson. No, it's not. It's Concordia of Michigan, which is a perennial NAIA playoff squad, travels to DeLand to play Stetson. That's going to be a toughie for Stetson.
That should be a good game. So kind of adding to that, what the nuances you kind of see, and I remember this is where it was fascinating to me because I knew about the association. I knew that they were a parallel organization to the NCAA, which I think is the best way to sort of on a macro level explain that to those who are unfamiliar. How do the scholarships work? Because I think that's one of the more nuanced things. And I remember Coach Prudhomme kind of explained it to me when I was at Texas Wesleyan. But could you explain that for our audience? Sort of that I think helps people also understand where they sit between, you know, D2 and D3. Because some people may not realize at one point there were divisions in football, and there are still for basketball, but there were divisions in football. But at a certain point, the team numbers kind of dwindled that they decided just to combine them both.
Yes. Yeah, so unlike D3, which is non-scholarship football for the NCAA, NAI does have scholarships. I believe it's 28. So you're sitting, you know, about eight below the D2 level, which is 20 or 32, 34, somewhere in that range. So you're going to see sort of the same talent level oftentimes at your NAI school as you would a D2 school. It's just a little... There's a few fewer scholarships on the football side. There are actually some sports at the NAI level that have more scholarships than D2 and NCAA.
Yeah, and I remember there's also even nuances to that where they could stack scholarships or split them up in creative ways that I know sometimes were not possible, at least within the rules of the NCAA, at least at the time.
Yeah, no, I've heard of a player who basically, not necessarily in football, but who basically gets a scholarship for a half the year so that the player can have eligibility longer. That's super fun.
Does, and as I recall, the NAIA, and I remember we actually had a little bit of a discussion within RCFB when does the season really start? I think it was a JV game that appeared on an early weekend. They're purely kind of exhibition to some extent. But JV teams are still in existence at least some programs, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, especially when you look at the Northwest up in the Frontier and the North Star, and even some in the Great Plains area. They'll have JV teams, and they'll play community colleges. They'll play other JV teams. I think if I remember correctly, I think the KCAC is going to have plenty, which is in Kansas, is going to have plenty of JV squads this year. It's just a great way to increase your enrollment at your school and have a larger development pipeline because you often don't know sometimes what you're getting as a coach. You know, you look at all these players, and even more so than in Division I where you've got these kind of these tweeners sometimes. Now you're trying to find all of these diamonds in the rough, and you know, obviously not all of them are going to work out.
You know, I remember, at least if you read some history here, and I know JD has a follow, but I just want to say the NCAA used to have a lot of them, but they were part of sort of the reason early on you couldn't play as a freshman in the NCAA. So JV teams were for that same reason, like, well, we got all these promising kids, let's see them play each other. And I think, for example, gosh, back in the day, when we talk about presidents who played college football, Harvard actually had JFK. I think he played on the freshman or JV team or something like that back in those days where there was no chance to be on the main squad. And it didn't really pan out. That wasn't his sport. He wasn't, you know, Harold Ford. But it's kind of fun to think of it that way. JD, what did you want to – I apologize. I know you were about to ask a question.
Yeah, so I was just curious with the talk of JV teams and the ability to develop some kind of talent, how much does that play into the recruiting for NAIA schools? Because we've already talked about, you know, that'll increase enrollment, but the growth of actual rosters and attracting kids from the high school circuit to the NAIA circuit, how much does that JV play into there? Is it an attractor, or is it more of a like, hey, this is going to be a good opportunity for you to get some kind of collegiate football? Or is this something more along the lines of like, hey, if you want to make sure that you're still playing some kind of football while getting education, do it here.
You know, I've never really asked some of the schools that play the JV where how they recruit around it, but I would imagine that most of your JV players are going to be, if I had to guess, they're going to be your players that are freshmen, sophomores. By the time you get up to be a senior, you've been in the weight program for 4 years. There's no reason you should be on the varsity squad. So I would think that that would be a great way to see a player a little longer and get a little bit more film, see how he works in with your culture and your program. If you're not sure and you've got that spot that you can fill, you might also be able to do it to where you're burning a very small portion of a scholarship or no scholarship at all sometimes if they really do want to play.
I remember talking with Alan, who was at the NAIA at the time, and he was explaining to me one of the attractions to being a program within the association are the administrative requirements, which actually, from what I understand, are quite streamlined compared to the bloat that the NCAA demands and puts on schools. Is that still the case?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the NAIA's best selling points, and they will tell you that up, down, and sideways, is that they return a better value on investment than the NCAA is going to be able to give. Now, as we progress and the NAIA continues to add a little bit more breadth to itself, you know, we'll see what happens with those numbers, but I still think that the NAIA is going to provide a good value for a school who's looking to add football, because you're going to get all the same options here. You're going to be able to do NIL. The NAIA introduced NIL before the NCAA did. It was in September of that year. I didn't even realize until the NCAA legalized it, and I went back and looked, and the NAIA had legalized at the beginning of that academic year. So you're going to get all the same, or some of the same niceties that you're going to get at the NCAA level. It's just going to be at a smaller school, which that really might work for a lot of players and at that level.
So now, when you say NIL deals, what are some those types of deals that are happening at the NAIA level? Because I mean, at the Power Five level, we've seen everything from collectives in making sure that guys can make sure that they get paid. And, you know, I don't think anybody's out there making sure that NAIA players are getting paid, you know, 40 grand a year or whatever else to just make the team. But certainly with those opportunities, is this more like mom and pop businesses? Is this more Instagram posts? What's kind of like the median type of NIL deal that you'll actually see at NAIA?
So there are actually a couple of collectives at the NAI level. The one that I'm thinking of is Pantheon, which is actually it's independent, crowdsourced, and they're on with a couple of folks. I know there's a couple of NIL collectives that have signed deals with schools for their sports athletes. So you are seeing a couple of the collectives. The one that I love the most is called Athletes for Children. And they partnered with Peru State, and those athletes are raising money with your traditional, you know, every touchdown I score, you know, raises X amount for kids with pediatric illnesses and stuff like that. So you kind of get a little bit of a mix. There's a couple of collectives, but there's a few of them that are more in the vein of Florida State's Dillon Gibbons, big man, big heart kind of program, kind of style.
Yeah, and you know, another aspect of NAIA, and I've seen this come into play, I think all of us have who follow the sport, is they make it really easy to just immediately join and compete for playoffs. I know in attracting Oklahoma Panhandle, that was part of it, but also with some of their brand new teams, I mean, I have to mention Ottawa of Arizona. I'm not sure if that's how they phrase it, but that team that formed as a branch of the Ottawa in Kansas, or I guess this independent Kansas branch is a little bit of a stretch, but they immediately were competing to be in the title game.
Sorry, guys, got rain here. You know, it is Florida.
Yeah, it is Florida. So can we talk about how, I mean, because one of the things I know is you can immediately join the NAIA and compete. And that's something that has attracted both the new programs, in addition to those low costs that we were just talking about, as well as a team that decides to, and there have been a few teams that have decided to move from the NCAA to the NAIA, I think partially because of that affordability aspect. And it lets them compete immediately for national championships. And there have been some recent teams that have made a play for that. Am I right, Corey?
Yeah, absolutely. Whether you're looking at a Kaiser team who is less than 10 seasons in, that's competing, or Lindsey Wilson, who hoisted the trophy in May 2021 after a spring season that at that point they were either on their 10th or 11th season winning the national championship. You're seeing schools with a lot of institutional buy-in, like a St. Thomas, really come in and being very competitive within 5 years of even starting a football team from scratch, from the ground floor. So as long, and the really the biggest thing is that institutional support. I've seen, I don't know how many videos and pictures of St. Thomas's president dressed up in full football uniform or out at practice in a football uniform and pads. That's institutional support.
Yeah, and that's St. Thomas in Florida. I always say that because I'm here in Minnesota. So we have another St. Thomas. Well, there's more than one, more than two. But we've got one up here as well. And I know there's a lot of that. And, you know, that kind of brings to an interesting question. NAIA football, and I think you see that as well at D2, clusters around certain parts of the country. Where are those areas that NAIA seem to do well? And what would you say is common among the characteristics of its members?
Right now, you're seeing a lot of development in Florida with the Sun. There are, you know, two or three new teams in there in the past 5 years, whether it be St. Thomas, Florida Memorial adding back a football program. You know, Kaiser is pretty new to the scene. Thomas from Thomasville, Georgia is going to be in there next year. So you're seeing a lot of growth there. I know I've got some folks listening, so I would be made fun of if I didn't mention that corridor there between Indiana Wesleyan and St. Francis and Marion there, kind of in the Indianapolis-Fort Wayne, and that little corridor. That right there is one of the fiercest recruiting corridors in the NAIA, because those are three teams that are playoff contenders 3 years out of four, and they want those kids from that Indiana area. So you've got those. You've got some that's developing in the south and southwest between Ottawa, Arizona, and Arizona Christian. Really, the only couple of parts of the nation that are not, you know, hotbeds for NAI are the far west, like California, and the northeast. Everywhere else has pretty much got a nice clump of teams.
Yeah, what I know, not all that long ago, there were a fair number of NAIA teams in California, and they seemed to fit the profile of the typical member. They were smaller, typically private Christian schools, and there was a sort of exodus. The last holdout was Menlo, and I think they just straight up dropped sports because they were on an island and they were in the Bay Area, and there was no one near them. I think for even D2, there was no one really near them, but what happened there? Because I think was Azusa, I know, was a part of the NAIA and a couple of those other programs. It seems that's always a danger. When a few programs leave in an isolated area, it seems to almost force everyone to kind of go along with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% sure, you know, on the exodus and like Azusa Pacific moving on to the NCAA. But there's still a lot of teams with great sports histories and great athletic support. In whether it be the CalPAC or the Golden States Athletic Conference, you know, whether it be St. Catharines is over there. I have to listen to a lot of the other sports podcasts to get some of these. Antelope Valley over there, and I always look over there and I go, man, if y'all started football, y'all would be winning this thing because of just the absolute talent hotbed you've got in California. There's no way that all these California NCAA schools and JUCOs are stealing all the talent. I would love to see a redevelopment of the California side, whether it be the GSAC or the CalPAC, putting football on their slate of sports.
You know, earlier we were talking, you'd mentioned Thomas in Georgia. They're an interesting program because they, I mean, they're the Nighthawks, which, by the way, is an awesome team name. I mean, that's great. I know it's not based on the Edward Hopper painting, but I love that name. They have an interesting connection because they really strongly go to the military veterans. And I think it sounds like they want to build a team that comprises the typical students they have, folks who served and may have not started to, you know, I guess, run through their eligibility. And now they're going to try and build a team, they hope, with at least some elements of their typical student body. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a military transitional program. They're also going to be including students from the ROTC program. The starting quarterback, their first signee, Chris Carter, is a transfer from Army. The head coach, Coach O, came from the Citadel. You've got a lot of background there from military institutions. That's how they're wanting to build it. And we'll see what they're able to do. If they're able to put together a full roster like that, I'm going to be cautiously optimistic on whether they're going to be able to do that, especially with some of the stipulations with ROTC having to be away if you're on, having players that are still in the reserves and having to be gone weekends. How are you going to structure your team around those, that roster somewhat instability? But if anyone can do it, it's going to be Thomas. So, you know, and part of that will be, I'll be actually, hopefully, Lord willing, the creek don't rise, will be on the football calls for Thomas football come this time next year.
You know, one thing, though, that I have wondered about, and this is something that I think those of us who try to follow NAIA, how can the association better reach fans and market itself?
Yeah, that's a huge deal. That was kind of in our off-season podcast series where we interview head coaches. That was one of the things that I really honed in on this off-season is how do you grow your boosters? How do you grow your support from your fans? And there are a lot of teams that are doing it very well, whether it be Dickinson State. Lindsey Wilson is starting a program for their boosters this year. If you want to look at fan support, I'll mention Indiana Wesleyan again. Those are some absolute D1 level facilities that Indiana Wesleyan has, and those are very friendly. They have luxury boxes at Indiana Wesleyan. At the NAIA level, they have luxury boxes, and that still blows my mind. But really, with a lot of these teams being new, and within 15 to 20 years of either starting or restarting a football program, they're still growing into the big money years for their alumni as they move on and they look back. So some of the teams like your Northwesterns are going to have strong histories. Bethel of Kansas has a strong history. Baker has a strong history. You know, Baker even has played Kansas and Kansas State a handful of times. Those teams that have that long history, and especially if they're the only game in town, like Dickinson State is up in the Northwest, they really do a great job of getting fan involvement. Basically, it's like the Packers, the town closes down for the football games, and really increasing that buy-in so that you can have nice things. Because we all know in college football, it's a building war always. It doesn't matter what level you're at. You're always trying to look for, you know, the nicest locker rooms, the nicest facilities for workouts. Your facilities are from D1 to D3. And the NAIA is no exception. You're always wanting to use that as a recruiting tool. And being able to have your former athletes contribute to your program is such a huge deal. And it's something that will grow in the next 10 to 15 years as a lot of those schools enter those good earnings years of their alumni.
So you've mentioned some really interesting things with luxury boxes and alumni relations and arms races at NAIA schools. So I'm really curious to know what donor relations are like at an NAIA school, because when you're trying to build up all of those different facilities, the money's got to come from somewhere. So is it more we're seeing a trend of alumni relations is creating a more donor-centric environment at NAIA, or are we seeing something that's more school intuition-based funding these arms races?
As we go, it's becoming more and more donor-based. And that's exactly what you want to see. You want to see your alumni paying it back into your school and making life easier and giving yourself a little bit of budget margin to get those niceties. I'll point out Dickinson State again. Their touchdown club does a really nice job. If you know, the Hank Biasot Stadium is beautiful up there. And Dickinson's not a very big school, and they have some really nice facilities for being in the Northwest and definitely not in a population center. So it's definitely engaging with your alumni, engaging with donors, and growing that way. That's going to be how you're going to want to do it.
One thing I know, I just want to do a quick station ID. You're listening to RCFB Talk 65. My name is Bob Echieri. I'm here with my co-host, J.D. Moore. We've got Corey Thorpe, who co-founded the NAIA Twitter account, NAIA F-Ball, which is probably the best media account following exclusively NAIA sports. Now, that kind of leads into something that I've been sort of thinking of as I try to follow this. And also, I want to, before I even get into it, welcome any questions from the audience. You can always hit request. We'd love to have you up here and hear your thoughts as well. But one of the frustrating things can sometimes be, because, you know, we're obviously at RCFB, we're passionate college football fans. We love football at all levels. We're the sort of folks who would be open to becoming casual fans of NAIA, and there's lots of them out there on Twitter, including but not limited to, you know, like the Sickos Committee at all. But one of the issues you sometimes run into is a dearth of information on it. Finding stories and info can be a bit awkward and hard. You know, even finding scores can be awkward and hard after the end of the day. That's part of the reason why, for those of you out there, why we really like NAIA F-Ball, the account. It's been one of the central spots you can look to. How does the sport at that level reach out to the casual fan? Because when I look for it, you'll find sometimes, I mean, I know Victory Sports Network is really solid in a lot of this, but it feels a little provincial in terms of how hard it is to enter the space and find out more about it. When so many of these games, for example, are free. Like, I know we're going to have at 6 p.m. Eastern, you know, a ranked versus ranked game, Reinhardt at Faulkner, and it's going to be available for free on both teams' websites. Like, they have a YouTube website that we've shared on the Twitter account, and we'll do that at the end of the talk for sure. The Faulkner website where the game will be broadcast. It seems like it's really a sport that could casual fans just by throwing out content, because they're not worried about being locked into some crazy agreement where there's going to be DMCA strikes on everybody who dares even blink at, you know, game footage. How do they use that? It seems like there's an opportunity to capitalize on it.
Yeah, so we typically put out a viewing guide for our media top 25 and those receiving votes in our poll every week. Right now, that is, I hate to say it, right now it's behind a paywall, because it's for our patrons on our Patreon. At this juncture, that will become free on Saturday before the game starts. So any of the Saturday coverage will be easy to the links are there. You click on them, you go. Literally, even just self-serving, that's what I use to watch all these games. It's my own viewing guide. It makes life easier for me. Some of these teams, I'll again mention Indiana Wesleyan, have a contract with ESPN. So if you want to see an Indiana Wesleyan game, by George, you can go on to watch ESPN. And if they're playing at home, they're going to be there. Another one that is really, really nice coverage, great production value, is SAGU Sportsnet. SAGU is how you spell SAGU. They are the Lions. They are, their broadcasts are absolutely fantastic, top-notch professional quality, and they're just on YouTube. So if you search SAGU Sportsnet on YouTube, you'll find them. Morningside's games are free on their YouTube.
And we should say Morningside is not a weak team by any stretch.
Not hardly.
Yeah, the preseason unanimous number one and the returning national champs, and that was not their first rodeo last year winning the national championship. They're just over in Sioux City, Iowa.
Yeah, so that's more actually – that's more of a dynasty at this point, winning the national championship in three out of the last four seasons. We'll see if they can do it again. If anyone can do it, it's going to be Morningside. They're amazing at their ability to come off a championship and still look hungry to win another.
Yeah, because right now it looks like NAIA football is, and maybe you can understand why, is really right now the strength, the top three preseason teams are all in Iowa. Not in the same conference. There's two conferences that are split across. But you have Morningside, you have Grandview, and then you have Northwestern of Iowa. Why do you think that's been such a strength for football out there?
Grandview's got a great history. Grandview's got a really good team. I've run into a couple of people that have picked them for the national championship. Honestly, they're in different parts of the state. You've got a little bit different recruiting ground for them. Northwestern is, man, they are the Auburn to Morningside's Alabama. They are... That is always a brilliant game. They start off playing each other next week. That's their each of their first game will be against each other. That's going to be a amazing matchup as always. So, I mean, when it's Morningside Northwestern, let's take those two and home in on those. You know, just like with any rivalry with bigger colleges that where both teams are really committed to this, you know you've got to keep up with the other, and you know as a player that you don't want to get a bit embarrassed against your rival. As a coach, you're going to bring in players that are going to help you beat that rival. You know, for the last few years, it's been mostly Morningside. That's the question. Can Northwestern get over the hump this year and beat Morningside in the regular season?
Now, heading in, how do you think, so you're kind of mentioning this, have those programs just been really good at building established relationships with, you know, the Iowa high schools, as well as kind of the immediate area? Is that the key to success for a lot of these programs that can manage that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got to have good high school relations just like you do at the Division I level, and even more so because you've got to figure out if, you know, which kids are going to be, you know, in your lane and which kids are going to be outside of your lane, whether that be in a lower D3 area or whether that be FCS, FBS level quality. But somehow, Morningside finds these generational talents. In 2018, they made their first national championship game against Benedictine on the strength of Connor Niles and Trent Solzma at a wide receiver and quarterback, respectively. And, you know, sitting out there, I thought, you know, surely these two generational talents, you know, they'll be, you know, they'll reload a little bit and they'll be back eventually, but not next year. Well, they find a couple other generational talents in Reed Juergensmeyer and Joe Dolanchek at wide receiver and quarterback that have been the leaders there. Now Juergensmeyer is gone. Dolanchek has one last run. How do you find that culture that reloads instead of rebuilds? It's, yeah, you've got to be in the high schools knowing exactly who these kids are and building those relationships early.
So I just want to emphasize, if you want to have a question for our guest and us, just feel free to hit request. But my next question is, who should we look out for this season? Who are some of the players that have you impressed? And I know, by the way, we'll give you a chance to really pitch the count at the end, but you found this Twitter account with a coach, John Cooper. He's coaching right now, so he couldn't join us this afternoon. But who should we look for this season?
Of course, you're going to look for Morningside. That's your number one. They play really high level. If you're looking for someone who's going to be more of a diamond in the rough and might sneak up and win it, I'd go for someone like Marion. Marion's got a good tradition. Was just in the national championship. Has rebuilt off a few losses of personnel and looks primed to get back to doing it. You know, watch out for St. Thomas in Miami Gardens. They've been building down there, and of course that's a talent hotbed. Even getting through everyone else's leftovers, there's still some high-level talent down in Miami. Always look out for, of course, Lindsey Wilson. They are moving on. Their head coach moved to Georgetown, which is a blue blood of the NAI, so watch out for Georgetown too. But Lindsey's got a new coach. Now, how can that new coach engage their those players and get in with that? And then, you know, some of the storylines that you're looking at, there's going to be, you mentioned Ottawa earlier. They and Arizona Christian lost a lot of talent this last year to graduation. How do those teams come back and try to win the Sooner Athletic Conference? And then overall, kind of theme of the offseason has been the more things change, the more they stay the same. The Mid-South and the KCAC had massive coaching turnover, but they all lost coaches to internal conference opponents. Bethel of Kansas loses their head coach to Friends. They hire a coach in A.B. Stokes.
That doesn't sound friendly at all. Sorry.
No, it doesn't.
How can you not?
Yeah. How can you not? So there's a lot of internal movement in those two conferences. So it's going to be some grudge matches between those two. Those will be fun games to watch for sure.
You know, one thing I do kind of wonder about, with the NAIA, they were, you know, founded by, you know, the one and only James Naismith as a basketball tournament in Kansas City. It's still known for basketball, but is basketball still king within the association?
To an extent, yes. And if we do have any basketball fans, I'll plug our friends at NAIA Hoops Report. Do a great job of covering the hoops landscape. There are a lot of teams that play basketball and play baseball that just don't play football, and I so wish they did. Teams like Georgia Gwinnett or Tennessee Wesleyan that are baseball powerhouses, I wish they would add football, because they would immediately, with that institutional support, would immediately cause waves. So there are only about 100 football-playing institutions in the NAIA, and I'm always up for more. There's some great teams out there, some great colleges out there that play other sports that I wish would pick up football.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that, because while it is now touching 100 teams, that's an improvement across the last decade or so, because they were closer to 90. And for those of you out there who may not be familiar, there was this moment, particularly in the 80s and 90s, where a lot of teams suddenly started leaving the NAIA and joining what was basically NCAA Division II and Division III, depending on their scholarship situations. But it started to stabilize, certainly around the millennium. And now we're sort of seeing a self-selective kind of these teams that really seem to fit. And there's been some movement both ways, but the number of football teams has actually ticked up, I want to say, a little bit, which seems to be a positive thing for the association. I know one of the things I was struck by is you could kind of tell which teams might leave. You'd sort of look at the teams in a conference, and if it was a state school with way more students than everybody else, they'll probably eventually maybe start to lean towards joining NCAA D2, you know, conference. But a lot of the teams, especially these new teams that are coming up, have been pretty satisfied there, because they see a lot of success.
Yeah, I mean, you look at teams like Southeastern that are champions at everything they do.
The Fire. I love that mascot.
Hey, man, and they have Fire at their stadium, too. So, I mean, you know, that's a great show for the fans who are there. You know, they're champions in everything they do, but they were NAI before they added football, and that's a big thing. You mentioned Texas Wesleyan earlier. They are the world ping pong champs, apparently.
They are. I remember you walk their athletic facilities, and they have this doorway just pasted with all of the championships. It's kind of neat to see it.
And so you've got these teams that have this long championship history, and I think that's where you want to grow. If I'm developing the NAI, you know, I'm playing NAI God here, and I'm developing this talent. I don't know that I want as much transfer growth from D2, D3. Case in point, you've got a Thomas Moore in the Mid-South Conference who was D3, transitioned to NAI for a few years, and now is going to transition in the next couple of years to back to D2. I don't know that I would want that transfer growth as much as I would want to try to look at schools that have been longtime NAIA stalwarts and say, hey, wouldn't you like to add a football program? Wouldn't you like another I don't know, 100 bodies on your campus that are going to bolster that enrollment number? That would be where I would grow it there.
Yeah, and St. Andrews is a school that came to the NAIA from D2 about a decade ago and then added as well. We've seen that happen as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. If I remember correctly, St. Andrews, I think they're owned by Warner, either Warner or Weber, one of those two schools down in Central Florida actually owns that college. And so you mentioned earlier the Ottawa of Arizona, Ottawa of Kansas. There's a couple that you wouldn't expect like that, where there's a little bit of, you know, they've got two irons in the fire there.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we kind of look at one of the things also I just wanted to mention, it's on my list of topics I wanted to talk about, with they've started I don't know for why it was so long in Daytona, but the national championship for the NAIA was in Daytona for at least when I started paying attention for quite a few years. They've started moving it around. Maybe Daytona kept making a good bid, but every 2 years they move. It was at Grambling for 2019. They were going to do 2020, but of course that season didn't happen. And now last year and this year, it's going to be in Durham, North Carolina. Do they know where they're moving next? I saw they had an open bid for 2025-26. I was joking with my friends, like, we should come up with an idea and make a bid for it, even though I have no idea how I would do it. But where is the going to be?
The bid information is on the NAIA's website. So, I mean, if you want to figure out how to make a bid, they've got it open to the public there on what you need to have on for a stadium to do it. When I chatted with the Durham Sports Commission ahead of last year's national championship, they were not only fully committed to the years that they had, but they were committed to bidding again and doing a rebidding and increasing that. And let me tell you, I went to Daytona. The last year it was in Daytona. I went to both of the Grambling ones, and then I went to Durham. And man, gentlemen, Durham blew me away as to how incredible it was in terms of the amenities that were there. The size of the stadium playing at Durham Memorial was perfect for the crowd that was going to be able to be there. This year it's going to be an all-new field turf that they're going to have put down. The national championship game last year was the last game on that turf, so you've got brand-new turf that's going in for this season. Durham was an absolute blast, and I would love for them to keep it. I know places like Savannah or Charleston have been on the short list. Heck, and I would love that. I mean, I wouldn't have to fly. But I'd love to see the NAIA long-term use the national championship location as a recruiting tool, whether it be, you know, have it for a couple years out in California and pull in some of those schools in California and say, hey, don't you want to be a part of this? Hopefully indoors in the Northeast, and find some Northeastern schools that would be a part of this. Use the national championship game and the spectacle of the game as a recruiting tool to grow your sport.
And NAIA uses a playoff. So how do they typically do that? Is it power ranked on who hosts?
So there is a selection committee. The way that they work is that there are 12 auto bids. As long as you win your conference and you are in the coaches poll top 20, you get an auto bid. That leaves at maximum 4 at-large teams that can make it into the playoffs, and that usually cuts off at around 12 to 14. If you're not in that 12 to 14 range, you're probably not getting an at-large bid. You know, but with the growth of the sport and how many people are adding football, it's not going to be too long from now that we need to have another conversation about maybe increasing the size of the playoffs just a little bit so that we can keep the talent level really high while having more teams having that playoff fun.
So we had a caller, and again, if anyone else wants to join, feel free to hit request. John, what was your question?
I was just wondering with the NCAA going through all the mess it's going through and the changes that are expected or maybe thought to be expected with the changing of the constitutions and the possible changes to the divisions, do you see it as a growth opportunity for the NAIA?
I definitely think there's going to be some trickle down as the top portion of the NCAA solidifies into this kind of the haves and the have-nots. you could see some trickle down from some of the lower teams in the FCS, maybe trying to go down to D2, and the NAI is going to be absolutely going to be a recipient of that. Kind of analogous to the COVID season, where you had basically an extra class of freshmen there, while, you know, your top teams kept a lot of these super seniors. Having that trickle down in the NAI and this last year, this year, and probably one or two years after are going to be the best football NAI-wise that we're going to see. And so I definitely see that trickle-down effect from the NCAA could be a huge growth opportunity for the NAI.
John, that was a great question. Thank you for joining us. Did you have any follow-ups? You're welcome to.
No, I just want to say thank you for always hosting these things. They're always great talks, and I appreciate this is a subject I don't know a lot about, so I appreciate to learn.
Oh, we appreciate that. Thank you. And let's see, we got one more person going to let up. Jacob, when you're up, just feel free to start talking. We look forward to hearing from you. I can see it's connecting. There you go.
As a Valley City alum, I just got to shout out the Paint Bucket game tonight. If you haven't watched that game, I suggest you do it tonight. It's the first night game in Jamestown in 60 years. The first game Valley City has without the quarterback named Jalen Pfeiffer in 5 years. Lots of great storylines, great football, great rivalry. Just got to shout that out.
That is going to be an absolutely great game. Jamestown, not that long ago, was absolutely putrid, but they have done a great job developing their team. Orange lids there. They call them the Pumpkin Heads. Real nickname is the Jimmies, but I like Pumpkin Heads better. Valley City State has a longtime head coach. They're 25-plus years at the helm of Valley City State. It's going to be a great game between two schools who are really wanting to push up in their respective divisions.
I love the Jimmies because I live here now in the Twin Cities, and I went to grad school with somebody who was from Jamestown, and when he told me it was the Jimmies, I thought that was great because then I learned like half the schools in this region do some variation of that. The St. Thomas Tommies, you know, the Gustavus Gusties, you know, everyone seems to, you know, the Augsburg Auggies, you know, a lot of those are D3 schools, but I have a soft spot for them. But Jacob, I apologize, I cut you off. You know, tell us about it. What makes you so excited about the game? What does it mean for you? What should we look out for?
As a Valley City alum, the schools are separated by 45 miles. And if you beat Jamestown, you had a good year. No matter what happens the rest of the year, if you beat Jamestown, you had a good year. The Paint Bucket is a very cool trophy. The story goes back in the day. They took a bucket of paint and painted it, and that became the traveling trophy. The schools, I mean, you have kids that are from Jamestown that go to Valley City. You have kids from Valley City that go to Jamestown. You have people who are Valley City alums that live in Jamestown, that work in Jamestown. It's an amazing rivalry, probably the longest rivalry in the state of North Dakota, because NDSU and UND didn't play for quite a few years there. So I think it's the longest continued rivalry in the state until that. We missed a year because of COVID, but this is the 123rd meeting of the Paint Bucket. Like I said, the first night game in Jamestown in 60 years, so they're jacked up about that. He mentioned Coach Mack. Coach Mack is in his 29th year at Valley City, his 26th as the head coach. He's the all-time wins leader at Valley City. He's getting up there in the NAIA wins. I think he's on the president of the coaches committee. Coach Mack is a great guy, and he mentioned Jamestown's really turning around Brian Mistro. He's really turned around that program. I'm really looking forward to tonight. And like I said, the quarterback, this will be the first time in 5 years that Valley City has a different quarterback at the helm. So I'm very interested to see how that's going to work out.
I just want to say, because some of you might be interested, I hope, in watching some of these games, the Jamestown Valley City State game is going to be available, again, on free streams from both schools. We dropped in the chat of this, which is the bottom right, or just, you know, in the replies of this tweet as well as on our feed, one of our users on RCFB kind of aggregated all the different streaming options for tonight's games. And four of the five have free options, which is going to be nice. Because including, again, not long from now, so we're not going to keep going for too long, but at, you know, 5 o'clock Central, 6 o'clock Eastern, you're going to have number 24 Faulkner hosting number 9 Reinhardt. And that's going to be an interesting game. That's going to be a great way to kick it off. And pardon me, I was corrected, there's 6 games this evening. And, you know, Kentucky Christian's hosting number 15 Georgetown. That's Georgetown of Kentucky. Am I correct?
Yep.
Yeah, and then as we said, as our caller, Jamestown's hosting Valley City State. We got Dakota State hosting Dakota Wesleyan. I actually, that game, I remember those two. They kicked off early on a few years ago, and there was a real following for that game thread. In fact, we started a game thread just for those, you know, casual fans on RCFB who might be watching this night. You know, we always love our game threads. That's what people do when they visit the subreddit. They like to comment and enjoy football. But that was an exciting game. I can't remember. Might have been 2017, 2018, but it was like the only game on and everybody was watching it. And I loved it. That's what makes these kinds of things exciting, because we all know football. We love football. And they play good football. And it makes it enjoyable on so many levels. I'm preaching to the choir here. I realize that. You know, I wanted to ask you, Corey, of these games, which ones have you the most interest? All of them are good, but which ones have got you the most intrigued?
So I'm a sucker for a trophy game. I don't care what it is. It could be – I love the $5 Bits of Broken Chair trophy. I mean, that is a massively great trophy. There are three trophy games tonight. Reinhardt Faulkner's a trophy game. You've got the Paint Bucket game. You've got Presentation and Mount Marty, the Catholic Cup, and then you've got Dakota State, Dakota Wesleyan, the Ag Bowl, which is also a trophy game. So if you're a trophy game junkie like me, tonight is the night for amazing random trophies.
And those, as you know, Jacob, I think, really conveyed that. Those are part of what make the college football experience so enjoyable, when you get to see these things. And I'm looking forward to Valley City State at Jamestown. I'm looking forward to all of these games, but get out there and watch them. We can't recommend it enough. As I said, so many of these schools make it so easy to watch these games. And I wish more of them would tweet out some of these highlights, because it's an opportunity. And if you've watched it, you know what we're talking about. It's always, always a fun game. You know, we're getting closer to those initial kickoffs. I wanted to let you, Corey, tell us about the account, why you guys created it, and what it's all about. And you can even talk a little bit about John, because he couldn't make it.
Absolutely. So my better half on this, John Cooper, was a Faulkner graduate back in the 2010s. And he really wanted to see media coverage grow for Apple. I was helping him on another effort. And I said, John, well, I'd be more than happy to help you on this as well. About Thanksgiving 4 years ago, he suckers me into recording a podcast with him, picking teams that I had never heard of on a podcast. And that went surprisingly well for me, as I was able to actually pick the national championship teams down through the playoffs. And, well, that was 4 years ago, and now we're here. It's at its core, it's about the kids. It's about getting media coverage to the places that don't get it. And it's about watching an amazing brand of football, whether you like air raid, whether you like defense, whether you like hard nose. We've got it all in the NAIA. It is a playground for the weird and arcane of offenses and defenses. And we just love coming along for the ride. So we are available at NAIAF Ball on basically anywhere that you can follow us. We're probably there. So join us for a great season from wherever you are, all the way to the unveiling of the red banner and the championship trophy, which is actually, the trophy is named for Hastings graduate and Nebraska head coach, Tom O'Brien? I always forget. I'm not a Nebraska fan, guys.
We won't touch it.
The championship trophy is named for him. Tom Osborne. There we go. Google is a great thing. It's the Tom Osborne Trophy in Durham. Come December, we will be there live in Durham. So follow us for another great season.
That is great. And again, for those of you listening out there, there's a lot of games coming up. We've shared a link to some of the free streams that are going to be available in our replies. Obviously, there's some exciting games we talked about earlier, like that Global Classico. Stewart, just share that again in our comments. Thanks again. Where Texas Wesleyan is hosting Arkansas State, the Mexico campus, which is totally separate. They play in ONIFA, which is the college football league down there. It's going to be an exciting weekend. I think for NAIA football, we encourage all of you to check it out. It's fun, especially tonight. If you love football, why not? It's free. You can check it out. Lots of good games. Lots of great teams. We talked about them. I mean, Faulkner hosting Reinhardt to kick us off. You know, rivalry games like Dakota State hosting Dakota Wesleyan, Jamestown hosting Valley City State. You know, we've got the Catholic Cup. There's going to be a lot of good things going on. And it just – it college football is here. How wonderful is that? This is it. We finally made it. Yeah. So, Corey, thank you so much for joining us. We are huge fans of your account. We encourage any of you that want to especially learn more about it or just kind of have your fingers on the pulse. They're doing the work that needs to be done. They're doing that, and I think it's important, and there needs to be more of it to cover NAIA football because it's a great sport. It's a great association with many conferences, and we welcome all of you to give that a holler. So thanks for joining us, Corey.
Thanks for having me on. Please have me on whenever. It's an absolute pleasure to come and chat.
Absolutely. We will definitely want to have you guys on in the future. Maybe John will be able to join us, so it'll be fun to have you both as well. So on behalf of all of us here, JD had to bounce for a second, but on behalf of all of us here, myself, Bodak Hayeri, my co-host JD Moore, our guest Corey Thorpe with NAIA F-Ball, thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on and joining us as part of our audience, as part of our community. We do these as much as we can. We like to cover all aspects of college football. Everything from, you know, earlier this week we had Wazoo head coach Jake Dickert. We talked HBCU football last night, and here we are talking the exciting world, and really is a fun, exciting world of NAIA football. So from all of us, thank you, and I'm going to hang up and listen.